Hello. First of all, I'd like to say thanks to the DAOs and also Creative New Zealand for making this show possible. Also, there are other people in the audience here, Justine for one, who also helped me, and CM. This show kind of started in early, well, the idea for it started in about 2015. That was when DAOs approached me to actually do a show here. And so it was always sitting in the back of my mind. In that year of 2015, I was lucky enough to win a prize to go to Denmark, and where I studied, well, I was an artist in residence for about 3 months. And while I was in Denmark, on the way to Denmark, I actually studied a lot of historical spirit processes that were brought forward in all these works. As you can see from the tray that's coming around, there's lots of interesting bits and bobs in there. The work kind of is kind of an extension of where I was going from when I left New Zealand. I kind of left New Zealand with the need to do a lot more research into my practices and techniques and stuff. I've gotten to a certain point where it just kind of vanished. You know, the ideas were no longer here, so I knew I had to go overseas. And I was lucky enough to do that, and all this kind of came to bear, as it were. How should we start? The earlier works are these three pieces here. They are kind of like disjointed handmade pots. The techniques that were used were kind of based upon early slipware that when I was in England, I was lucky enough to, well, I kind of had a dream to do mudlarking, and I went to the Thames and it was freezing. It was like outside today. It was colder. And if you've ever been to London in the winter, you know it's freezing. That's what it's like on the street. You go to the Thames and there's just this freezing, frigid wind that comes up. And you know, you're walking around, squashing around, looking at all this detritus. And you know, you're worried about, you know, a rat jumping out of here, or you know, an East Ender mugging you because you're on their bench or something like that. So anyway, I went mudlarking, and on this trolley here, come and have a look. I'll explain some of the stuff. So, all this is permanent to the work. Like here we have, this is like black basalt ware that was made by Joshua Wedgwood. Dates from about 18th century. This tool here, well, it's a sheep bone. Everybody knows what that is because we're from New Zealand. That was actually used on all these little jugs here to impress, to make the feet ring, foot rings. And this is what was actually made. That's dates from about 1650. And what they actually did was they used this bone to push and make the rim. So these pieces, you know, I went over the Thames and I just found just supermarket bags full of shards. And it wasn't just this stuff, it was like Queensware, Wedgwood, Roman, Norman, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, after I got all these shards, it was like, okay, we're off to Denmark. And then I was going to make kind of salt glazed ware, which this is a 16th century crug. So that's like a beer mug, like your coffee mug, but that's 16th century. Okay, that was bought in Cambridge. It's been fixed up. You can tell the top, the handle on the top lip is new, but you know, that's original. So if you handle it, please be careful. So yeah, I was going to Denmark to do this. And I got there and I was going, oh, you know, I sat there and I was carving all these lovely little patterns to put into the pots and stuff. And I was throwing big saggers to put into the kilns because I've got to do salt glazing because I didn't have a salt kiln there. And the price was just going up and up and up and up. You know, like I was having to pay to fire one kiln, it was 600 kroner. And that was just to do a bisque to fire my saggers. So the money was just, I was hemorrhaging it basically. So I thought, oh, bugger that. So my fellow colleague said, right, let's just go away for the weekend. So we did. And we went up to Louisiana, which is a big art gallery north of Copenhagen. And we travelled on trains and, you know, four train trips, and we got there eventually. But as we went through various train stations, the Danes have massive public work sculptures around their stations. And, you know, I saw some, just some, these kind of, I don't know, brutalist sculptures, kind of brutalist, and what else? And yeah, and they just stuck. So I went back to the studio, and I sat there and looked at all the stuff and thought, oh, bugger that, I can do that in New Zealand. Why did I travel all this way to do what I can do in New Zealand here? So I just sat there and started playing. And then I was starting to use black clay, which we don't have in this country. So I made all these tests. So these were made in New Zealand prior to, you know, the show, because I had to change the clay I was using. I wasn't happy with the clays. Like, I wanted a high fire black, a high fire red. Those clays don't exist here. They do overseas, but not here. So it was kind of a juxtaposition. Okay, I can import, and that's going to cost huge amounts of money, take a long time to get, and then if I want it, I have to keep on importing it, or I make mine. So I made, I think, 85 separate coloured tests of clay from, I used like old clay bodies that we used to have in New Zealand, which we no longer have, and then I just added oxides and stuff and fired them in different kind of atmospheres and stuff. And then once I'd done that, so these are all the clay body tests, okay? And then I looked at the slipware, okay? So this is my kind of rendition of slipware, but this is, I think that's 15th century English, about there. So this is what I was found. So all these things are coming back into my whole tests for this work. So once all this testing was done, I then proceeded on this. So, yes.
Can I just ask, in terms of, you say high-fired ceramic, so are you looking at that kind of mid-firing point between stoneware and porcelain?
Yes.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And when you say high-fired red, so that's with oxide or iron?
Yeah,
iron.
Yeah.
Right, so you're adding the iron oxide
iron
into
iron.
It.
Yeah, or you add cornerstone to a terracotta body.
Yeah.
So that lifts the melt rate of the clay. So, yeah, so, and I only found that out after I've done all this.
And the firing temperature?
The firing temperature for the stoneware, salt glaze is about 12,000 degrees. For my works, because I was adding so many colorants to it, if you get two different types of clay bodies and add colorants to them, they will shrink at different rates, so that means your piece will fall to bits. So I had to make, I mean, there's about six different clay bodies here, so each one was tested in this way for colorant. So, you know, one clay body would have this test done, another one, another, another. So I had a range of clays that I could use, and then that meant a range of firing temperatures, a range of, you know, glaze differences and stuff like that. So, yeah, the research into the show was probably about 8 months, you know, just to do the work. Yes.
It's just, maybe we can get you to try and project with it far away, because it has to be held close for it to be loud enough to record. But we'll try and do a medium in between.
Right, we'll stop for a tea break now. we can edit it, that's good. Yeah, so we'll walk around the club, it works now. If you want to have a quick geeze here at the stuff, be most welcome. Ask me questions, I'll give you the microphone. Come forward, I don't bite. Yeah, you can pick things up.
How to get the stripes on?
The stripe is agate wear. So basically, it goes back to these clays.
Yeah.
So This is the parent clay body, the white, and then I've added oxides to it, and then you make a sandwich. So it's like if you're making a big sandwich, and then you flatten it, and then you cut it, and then you flatten it, and cut it, and flatten it. And that's how all these works were done here. So each individual layer of clay was like originally that thick. So actually, where's the tray? The tray. Get the tray out. Get the tray out, right. Okay, so here, there's a pattern there. Okay, this is the reverse of the pattern. So you can see how it's been made. And these are other little bits of it too. And then you stretch it and flatten it, and that's how you get it. And that's called agate weave. And this is a finer agate weave.
So it's layers of clay rather than applied
layers. Yeah, it's like I used to actually try and do this technique by hand painting. And some pieces would take up to maybe 4 months to do. Just sitting there with a pen nib and just painting. But then I decided I'll make the decoration throughout. And when I do this, like, it turns out like that. When it's fired, so it's all dirty, then you have to scrape it back and then sandblast it to get that lovely colour coming through. So when you make the works, they look like this, covered in muck. And then you've got to scrape them and scrape them and scrape them back, and then finally you're done with that. So yeah, making agate ware is extremely laborious. Just to make say the clay for this pot, this is frown agate. So you can see the if you have a look inside of it, you pass it around. you'll find that the interior is absolutely filthy, but you look at the exterior, it's absolutely clean. So what they've done is they've actually scraped it back to reveal. It's kind of like sanding an old chair and seeing the layers of paint. Same difference. Yeah, so that's agate ware. So that was also, I was doing agate ware when I left for Denmark, and I was also doing slip trailing, but only looking at it. But until I hit London, it kind of reared its ugly head and said, yep, this is what we're going to do. So yeah, so we'll walk around now. Oh, also, this is very important as well. When I was in Denmark, where I was working, black and white flint was everywhere. And this kind of really stuck to me, because we don't have flint in this country. And I remember as a child, when I grew up in England, it was everywhere, but here we don't have it. And that's why a lot of the works are black and white. It's just because of this. Right, now these works were built. I mean, you can see here, there's agate ware in this one. So what I tend to do is when I build works, it's not like the normal way of decoration. I will decorate before I actually build. So all the slabware, like these are all slab made. So all these slabs, all these little bits here, were actually decorated prior to me building the works. Because usually the usual format is you build and then you paint. But for me, I decided to flip it. So I decorate. So I end up with these massive big slabs. And I just cut them and build. And then layer and layer and layer. And then fire them, bisque them, sandblast them. And then go back in and glaze. And then sandblast again after I've fired. So they actually get sandblasted twice. And then they're usually waxed to put, just to bring up the shine, or else it's just dry. So I did this basically to make the works look like they were worn and they were old. I didn't want, some works when they come out, they'd just be high gloss brown, and I was just like, oh, And then I'd spend 2 hours. I think this one up here, this tall, the girl who came through the mailbox, that piece there took about 3 hours to sandblast. And that was each time, because you're just standing there, just blasting and blasting, and then you've got to go and clean and bring it back out to the light to see if you've missed anywhere, and then you go back. Back and forwards, back and forwards, back and forwards. Always worrying about, am I going to drop it? So you've got these humongous big gloves on, and you've got this heavy blasting gun, and sand just everywhere. So, yeah. So that's how all the works are treated. The only ones that weren't sandblasted were the three little jugs here. But everything else was blasted. So yeah, so it was a, for me the whole process was about removing, it wasn't about building and then finishing, I was kind of taking it back. So I wanted more of a dry, kind of, so you could see the clay bodies basically, so you just couldn't see shiny decoration. Because I've been known for doing lots of highly decorated shiny glazes, enamels and stuff previously, and I, when I came back from Denmark, I just thought, nah, I just can't be bothered with that anymore. It's just, it wasn't me, it wasn't, I wasn't doing any more political subversive works. I felt I'd kind of touched on that enough, and for me, this is all about experiences, and, you know, in Europe, like, you know, just things that I'd seen, or, you know, all stuff, and all these preparatory drawings kind of link up to it as well. There's one over here, specifically, where is it? These two early pieces here on the notepaper, they were done, like I'd try and paint or do a sketch in the morning in Denmark for work, you know, just get ideas going. So you'd kind of warm, that was my warm-up process. And then I'd write, I'd jot little notes down on things I had to do that day. And there's one here that says something about pasta and some, was it coconut milk? I recently got an article done in Art New Zealand, and the writer commented on this. I'm just going to clarify why I've got pasta and, what was it, coconut milk? Because where I was staying in Denmark, in the Gulagard, we had sometimes up to 20 visiting artists, sometimes we had 5. Now all these artists have to cook once a night, and you get there and you go, okay, pescatarian, vegetarian, gluten-free, da-da-da-da-da. And then, okay, you go, right, so your day at Gulagard is spent figuring out what the hell are you going to cook? So yeah, write this long list, and that's what it was. That was my day to cook. And so I was going to do a kind of a pasta and cream cheese thing. I thought, oh, I can't put bacon into it because that person won't eat it. So that's why that's up there. Okay, so yeah, so these little sketches were kind of based on what I was seeing. The yellow kind of represents the Danish houses. Like, it's called Scan Yellow. If you've got Northern Denmark, all the houses are painted that bright yellow. There are kind of loose touches on that colour in some of these works. So it's you know, everything kind of pulled together once I was back here. Like, little bits and pieces would be flashed up in my memory and thought, oh yeah, I'll put that in there. And they just kind of built. So I didn't really have, I'm going to make 4 vases, 3 jugs, 6 of those. None of that. It was just like the whole process took a year or over a year to build. It was just a slow progression. So anyway, these are the first ones. This one is the very first. Yeah. This was called Legs, because it's got a leg here. So you just, if you can kind of see it from this angle, if you look through, there's a leg. So that's Legs, okay? And then we come over here. Lost Page, this is the next one that was built. So I'm trying to give you an idea of how the work progressed through my thinking. So it was from there to here, and then we catapulted to this. This took about, it was about 2 months to build. It was like, you know, you see all these black lines, that's where every piece has been joined. So every piece was cut out, joined, stuck, and then covered over with this black line. So yeah, that's the girl who came from the mailbox. Now, this piece kind of represents like the junk mail that gets forced into our lives. And this was a farmer's catalogue model, you know. Like this in the undies. And I just kind of went, yeah, okay, right, yeah, just sketch, sketch, sketch. And then I drew these pictures here, and then it just kind of moved on to that. And then, what did we work on next? The next one was the paper jug down there. Colm jug. While I was in Cologne, I saw a sculpture while I was walking around, and it was just hidden down an alleyway. I think we found out who eventually did the sculpture, but it was just this brutalist concrete wall piece, just hidden. Wow! So that kind of that's kind of where that piece came from. It's just the black and the white. Like Cologne in winter is not a nice place to be. It's cold, it's dark. You know, there's lots of people that go to the cathedral, but they don't really, you know, walk around the town. And I remember I was staying in this very strange little hotel where I had to sleep in a boat. It was a rowboat that was turned into a bed, and that was my room. And I was walking down to the museum or something, and I walked past a shop. And I was going, because there was a lot of immigrants coming into Germany at that time. Like, a lot of refugees were floating in. And I was walking down the road, you know, typical Kiwi, and there's all these people queuing outside the shop while I pulled it. And I thought, well, what's this? You know, is this a food place or something? But no, it was for Nike sneakers. And there was queues, miles, and I kind of admired, well, hang on, why are they queuing up for this? And I'm like, oh, hang on, I'm in Germany. And then the whole kind of politics of that zone kind of kicked in. So it was kind of, a bit weird. So that's where that kind of piece came from. It was kind of a bit dark and a bit morose. And then from there, we moved on to what was next. I think the jugs, three jugs were next. They were the follow-on process for that. And they were made by using the little sheep's bone. And, you know, I threw them and then I just joined everything up and painted them black and white, basically. My daughter calls one the piss pot. I'll let you figure that one out for yourself. There's also one here called the knuckle jug. And you can see on the handle of it, it's just got a kind of a protrusion. So that kind of represents the, you know, pressing of the forms. So I did these works and then we moved on to these two up here. This is a balanced burden. This is kind of like, a German peasant kind of carrying a huge, humongous load on his back, you know, walking around. But there, again, that was agate and black clay. And that was, yeah, the same process as this, just build. The trouble is when I built that one, it was on that tiny base. So I had to support it with blocks and stuff, and it was like, I'd have to move the box away and see if it would sit like that because it had to fire standing up vertically. I couldn't lie it down. So, yeah, so that's actually got four big things in the bottom of it to hold it into place. So that's why it's called balance burden also, because it's likely to tip over. This is one of the final works here, the Old Man of Store. The Old Man of Store is a rock in the sky on the other sky. Have anybody been to Skye? No? Yeah, well, you know the Old Man of Store. Yeah, it's this humongous kind of, is it granite? It's this, anyway, the coast goes like this, and there's this huge rock that stands out from the coast. Like, it's like a standing stone, basically, but it's massive. And that kind of reminded me of the Old Man of Store. You know, it's a very bleak place, Skye, in the winter as well. So, yeah, that's why it was Old Man of Store, but it was just following the same kind of cut and paste method of building, sandblasting, room, every decoration. Okay, and finally, there were the four works down the end. They were going to be more akin to the little pots here, especially the last two, the black ones. They were going to be like home on jug, but I decided to decorate them. I'm still trying to go through them all. Yeah, so it's kind of funny. Today I was looking at a stick to bring here, and I found, also in China last year as well, I found this horrible political kind of song and dance we had to do for the TV crews. And that had lots of work that kind of represents on this show as well, but I'm not going to talk about that. So these were the last pieces made. They are thrown, and then the agate weave was veneered, cut. And I was looking at the tumbling block process. Like, if you have a close look, don't focus on the pot, just focus on an area of it, and you'll actually see tumbling blocks in the design. And these were the most infuriating pots to make, because I'd work up to maybe here, and then my daughter would come in and go, da-da-da-da-da. And I'd lose my train of thought, and then I'd go, now hang on, how do I stick that piece on? because I was trying to like give it a sense of depth. Like, if you just focus on a small area, you see there's a kind of a tumbling block pattern on it. Like, yeah, so it's kind of like licorice all sorts. So yeah, so these pieces were really frustrating to make. Yeah, so they were built, thrown, at least all were thrown, and then I just cut and added like this appendage on. So this was, this stuff here was actually, I think it was off the larger girl who came through the mirror, or girl who came from the mailbox, the same slab. So yeah, I've just had these massive slabs, so I just used up the pieces and those ones. Now these two, this kind of, these pictures on this piece represent, are represented in the drawings. So they're actually, that I like put the drawings actually on the pot, but I used agate ware, so it wasn't a line drawing. But this has also got a very old German technique called Knebschnitt and Knebis. And this was used by Westerwald pottery, like Westerwald German salt glazeware. You might know it's blue and white. Okay. Well, they used to like decorate the pots just by putting patterns on it. And so this was that technique, because I had put it in the brief for the show that I was going to use this technique. And I thought, oh crap, I haven't used that technique. So I quickly went. So that's why these works kind of evolved. So this one here is kind of based on the tumbling block, but also based on the Knebis. So it's a massive blow up of these little bits here. So just one square is like that. So that's how these two kind of evolved. And yeah, that's basically it. Any questions?
Yeah. Your work immediately strikes you, well, strikes me as having two connection points. One of them is brutalist architecture. The other one is very, very early Braque-esque cubism. And yet, the origin of the works seem to be quite different, that they're actually telling stories or representing things in your life, like a person you've seen or an experience you've had or whatever. So they don't start so much in those techniques or in those art forms of brutalism and cubism, but start perhaps, and this is obviously a question, in more of an experience or representation of a person or something of that nature.
Yeah, that's a good question. How do I retaliate? Yeah, I mean, making the works, I think I came to these works just wanting to par it right back. I didn't really want to put everything out on the plate for the observer to see. With the brutalism and the constructivism, I think that was just in my mind. It was just something riding behind it all the time. So I wasn't aware. Well, I was kind of aware that I was doing it, but it wasn't like, I'm going to make a brutalist teapot. I'm going to make this. It wasn't. It was just kind of an osmosis thing, really. I mean, I'm using these like old techniques, date from, you know, right about 1750. The sculpture, so I was using old techniques. So what I was trying to really do was bring in old, ancient techniques that aren't used anymore and then put them on a modernistic form. Probably the cubist, the brutalist. I mean, it was just what I saw in Denmark. It was just something that had to come out. It wasn't just, I'm going to do all this. It's just an evolving of my practice, because it's always been there in my practice. I mean, I can date this kind of need to manipulate and cut up and build kind of, I don't know, cubist or brutalist forms from 2000. I mean, and it goes back to probably 1990 as well. That's always been there. It's just, it was kind of reawakened when I went back to Europe. That kind of method of making was just, it was always there, but it's just got reawoken. So it was kind of like, it's Yeah, it's kind of hard for a lot of people to see the work if they know my old work, because they kind of go, what the hell's going on here? They can't...
Well, I mean, the previous works have often been pictorialist.
Yeah.
And although they've been extended old work techniques, they've been pictorial in terms of either political commentary or personal life story. And these aren't.
Yeah, that's gone. Yeah, it's just, it was just a reawakening. That's why I had this, like, 2 years ago. I remember saying to you, I've got to get the hell out of New Zealand. I'd reached my research dry point. I could not go any further. I needed more impetus. See, because, like, when I was growing up, I was in England. My parents dragged me around Europe at the age of 8 or 9, so I was thrust into that kind of looking at architecture, art galleries back then. Then come back to here, back to Dunedin. You know, and it's kind of like a huge culture shock. And then I went back in the mid-90s, and then I went back, 2 years ago. So it's always been a driving force behind my work. That's always been under the surface. So now it's come to the point where it's just kind of come out. So I honestly don't know where I'm going to go through from this show. I'm having, like, a mate working on a piece now that's like, it looks like a brutalist building, but it's, I mean, I'm sitting there going, what the hell do I do here? You know, it's a totally unexplored territory for me. So yeah, it's kind of like the real, what I make is coming out now, not what's been in the past. That's kind of been like a notebook, sketches, you know, learning to write almost. Yeah, so did that answer your question?
Very well.
Good, any more? I'll pick someone. Someone who doesn't look like they want to talk. How about Pip? Pip can ask a question.
Well, I guess what's next?
Yeah, what's next? What's next for me, as in shows, as what I'm working on, or just work in general?
Well, maybe what's inspiring you at the moment. So you say that you needed to get out of New Zealand and you had all these ideas from your mudlarking and from Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you looking?
Well, I'm still sifting through, like, that work, like, what I saw over there, because, I mean, when I, on route to Denmark, I went through a period of about a month and a half travel. I went through France, Belgium, Germany, Lower Rhine area. I went to museums every day. I mean, I have got reams and reams of images and, you know, notes that I haven't even still touched upon. So this work is kind of where, when I left Denmark, this is kind of where my work was going. So that's 2 years ago. So now I've got 2 years of research to sift through and think of, okay, where is it going to from here? So that's, yeah, so, it, well, with my work, it's not really, I don't sit at home in my studio and just make. I have to have a deadline, I have to have a reason to make. So currently I'm working on a show for the Wellington Potters Association, which I'm going to be the judge of, and also there's an exhibition in Christchurch as well. So those are my two things that I have to work on this year. And then after that, there might be, I don't know, there might be something in Norway, I don't, you know, it's just, that's the way I work. So I don't sit there and just go, right, I'm going to make 10 cups today, I'm going to make 14 pots this week. It doesn't happen. It's like, for me, it's a very long process to go into the studio. It's kind of like, you know, when you go for a run or, you know, you do something extremely strenuous, you just don't go out for a run. You do warm-ups before. For me, a warm-up will take a month, you know, and then my kids will get sick. So, you know, so it's always a, you know, up and down process. Yes.
Thank you. So I just feel like there's quite a lot of work in this one body of work that has, I wonder, is are there new techniques that you've gained from this body of work that you want to explore further?
Yes.
And, like, it's sort of still quite a short turnaround period to kind of, like, in a way, be making new work, like, kind of like you've done this and now you're moving on. Like, do you sometimes, in retrospect, like, end up wanting to explore elements of work again?
Yeah, sometimes I do. I mean, like, I was looking at this new teapot I'm making and thinking, oh, I want to get back into press moulding, basically because I think that form needs that. But, yeah, there are certain techniques in this, yes, that I've still got to explore. I mean, this is only the starting of it. This is only the prelim, you know, there's more coming. Yeah, but for my work, it always changes every 2 years. It kind of flips from something to something to something to something. It's never been a kind of a like a flat plateau of, oh yes, you've done that. Yeah, you can see gradual progression. For me, it's a very sharp like movement.
Do you feel like this is a new starting point though, for the next sort of
trajectory? Not really, because I was doing this back in 2000.
Yeah.
But it's not known, because all those works I've tended to keep myself, so a lot of people have never seen them before. So I can look at that piece right now, and I've got an idea already of where that piece is going to go, you know, when I get back home. You know, it's just going to take a photo of that.
Yeah.
You know, So the hard thing is for me is that I never ever see my works like this. I only see like maybe two. So when I was doing the show, I had to have photographs of all the work because I couldn't remember what I'd made. It was like, because it was over such a long period of time, you know. And, you know, when you're working in a studio, like some of these pieces, I was in there for, I think the bigger ones, like it was like 2 weeks non-stop, just going every day, add a bit more. So it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to make this. It was like hard. Yeah, it wasn't enjoyable to make a lot of this stuff. That's why I tended to make the smaller works, because they were fast, you know, the bigger works. I was originally going to make works this big for the show, and I was going, oh, you know, they would have taken, yeah, I would have lost the plot, basically.
Yeah. So it's not how you usually work?
No. I only work now for exhibitions. That's it. I have a dealer up in Auckland, and the work just gets, or shows, or competitions. I actually don't have a shop. I don't make, you know, teapots, plates and stuff. No. Yeah.
So I was kind of interested in the relationship between the sketches and the works. So it seems like they're kind of standalone works in themselves, but then also how fully formed are these before you actually make them in relation to, because you've made these sketches.
Those are just idea sketches.
Okay.
Just to get me sorry. My brain.
My two days.
Oh,
sorry.
No, this, yeah. Yeah, that was a preliminary sketch. I mean, I very rarely sketch. I mean, when we were at art school, we were taught to design, and then make. And we did that. And I did it for, like, I used to do a sculpture. I used to be a sculptor at art school. And then I fell into clay as a medium to make sculptures. But since I left art school, I very rarely sketch.
Okay.
It's more, I will sketch with what I've got in front of me, like it'll be clay. Yeah, they evolve as they're built. I don't sit there and go, I'm going to put that piece there or this piece. That way of working for me is just too disjointed.
So why the sketches here?
Well, the main one for the girl in the mailbox was I saw the human form and I had to, like, plan it. So I was very much into using planes, linear planes, and volumetrics, and so that's why those were sketched. And the colours were, okay, they were kind of representative of the colour of the clay that I'd want to use. I mean, if you have a look at the sketches, they're kind of loosely close to the sculpture, but they're not. So it was just a way of preliminarily warming it up. Yeah. And it was just to give the, like, well, not the punters, but the people that come to this, an idea, you know, the process. I mean, you know, and there's also all that. I mean, that's a whole different kettle of fish over there on that trolley. I mean, because that's where it starts. It starts there. It starts in the...
Is that
No, that's part of the show. Well, it's not part of the show. Well, it is, but it's just a way of explaining the processes. Will it remain when I'm gone? No.
We pull it out.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. So no, it doesn't travel. Like I want to get it all back because there's some tests that I want to look at. But no, I mean, see, for me, it starts off in historical research. That's where it starts. And that starts from making the clay. Like, I didn't buy any of this clay. I had to make it. I had to make everything. I had to research. Like, the glaze base I use for these ones dates from the slipware glaze. And that dates from about 1700. And I was lucky enough to find a very old manuscript that was used in New Zealand in the brickworks. And that lists all the original glazes that were used in 1890. So I use those recipes to do this. So I'm also a bit of a, I don't know, Asperger's into research of, yeah, a bit of a nerd in ceramics, into industrialised ceramics. Not, I don't touch leach or Hamada or Japanese. I like industrialised technique. Because if you think about it, like, the potters that we know, okay, in this country, they all came from some kind of industrialised background. And then it became, you know, in the 70s, everybody took it up, wood firing, salt glazing, blah, blah, brown pottery, leach hammer tradition. But you go right back to New Zealand, and I think it's the Woodnall family were the first potters in the country. Now, they came from Stoke-on-Trent. So if you can imagine going from Stoke-on-Trent to Invercargill, there's no industry. You have to build everything yourself. If you want anything overseas, it's going to take, like, 6 months to arrive on a boat. That's even if the boat gets here. Now it's still the same. But yeah, so that's where my research, and so it was that part of the work as well. It wasn't just, I'm going to do constructive, leak, glaze, slip, trail, blah, 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 blah. So that was all part of the process. Hmm. Yes, many layers. Yes. Any questions? Lisa, you got a question? No? Anybody else?
It's just an observation, it strikes me that the vessel is kind of critical to your practice, and we're not talking about necessarily a kind of functional vessel, one which is non-functional, and you tend, and it looks like you're kind of really pushing the kind of decorative, really exploring what you can do actually with the vessel, taking it right to that point there where in fact you're, you know, it's obviously very sculptural, but what is interesting with the show is that you've taken it right back into a more kind of functional form at the end. And you're talking now about continuing with the vessel form too.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's,
yeah.
That just seems to underpin, that totally underpins your practice, that form.
Yeah, observation. I was actually trained as a potter. That's why I was actually trained. When I was at art school, I used to do a lot of Japanese wood firing, dinner plates, teapots, coffee mugs, vases, da 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 da. And up till probably about 2.5 years ago, I was still doing that. But the good thing about the grant from CNZ is it said, right, stop that work, just concentrate on this. So it was like a breathing space. So it was like a break for me, you know, because, and also going overseas was another break for me. So, you know, it just freed up that. It kind of said, oh, okay, you don't need to do that now, you can go do something else. So that's what's really good about, you know, if you can get grants and, you know, and you can get bodies and exhibitions locked in, you can actually work on something that's new, because that's what it's all about. It's not just about repeating the same old stuff. Yeah, because that would just be a bit boring for me anyway. Anybody else? Sian?
I was just going to say, I'm glad you talked about the industrial stuff, because I was going to ask you that question. So I think it's really interesting, and I think it's... why we wanted to show your work was because nobody else comes close to doing what you do, and you know, we've just
again, touching on some of the previous shows we've been doing here at the Douse, we've been looking so much at Eastern influence, and it's just so refreshing and interesting to see a completely different perspective and just all the layers and threads that you draw from. So, yeah, I think that's awesome. It's really exciting. And so please give Richard a very warm thank you.